bad is California's drought? The entire state is considered to be in a severe drought, and that has not happened in 15 years. A new report from UC Davis says the drought is responsible for the greatest reduction to water availability for agriculture ever seen. This could cost the state $2 billion and 17,000 seasonal and part-time farm jobs. This also could lead to pockets of extreme deprivation and where we're out of water and out of jobs. The situation is clearly dire, and there seems to be no end in sight. Water scientists say we could run out of water in 2 years if this continues. So what should be done about it, and what can we do about it? Join us after the news.
BBC News with Marion Marshall. There's growing international concern for thousands of Christians who fled from their homes after jihadists in northern Iraq captured Karakosh, the largest Christian town in the region. Militants from the Islamic State group seized the town after Kurdish troops withdrew. Sebastian Usher reports.
France has called for an urgent meeting of a UN Security Council to address the latest crisis in Iraq. The concern is not just over the tens of thousands of Christians and other religious minorities fleeing the threat of the jihadists, but also the ability of Kurdish forces in the area to withstand the latest offensive by the Islamic State. Amidst unconfirmed reports of atrocities by the militants, the fate of thousands of members of the ancient Yazidi sect who've taken refuge in the mountains still hangs in the balance. The global concern will also be raised by the ever-widening ambition of the Islamic State, not just in Iraq, but in Syria and even Lebanon.
Reports from Lebanon say Islamist militants have mostly pulled out of a town on the border with Syria that they overran at the weekend. The seizure of Arsal was the first time that militants fighting in Syria had made a major incursion into Lebanon. Dozens of people are reported to have been killed as the Lebanese army mobilised to try to drive out the militants, who included fighters from the Islamic State group. Russia has imposed an almost total ban on food imports from the European Union, the United States, and other Western countries that have imposed sanctions on Moscow over its policy in Ukraine. The Russian Prime Minister, Dmitry Medvedev, said Russia would not import meat, fish, fruit, vegetables and dairy products from the EU, the US, Australia, Canada and Norway for a year. Russia imports more than a third of its food, but the BBC's Steve Rosenberg says people in Moscow don't seem concerned.
More than 90% of Russians get their news from television. And the television is telling them at the moment not to panic, that everything's OK, that the shelves will not be empty, that in fact these measures damage the exporters outside of Russia much more than the Russian public, and that Russia will find alternative sources of food. Most of the people I spoke to said it was actually a good thing for their country because it would force Russian producers, manufacturers, to actually boost their output.
The NATO Secretary-General, Anders Fogh Rasmussen, has accused Russia of continuing to destabilise Ukraine and promised Kiev the support of the alliance in the face of what he called Russian aggression. Speaking to reporters in the Ukrainian capital, Mr. Rasmussen asked Russia to show it was serious about de-escalating the situation in the region.
I urge Russia to follow the genuine path to peace, to stop its support for separatists, to pull back its troops from Ukraine's border, and to engage in a sincere dialogue for a peaceful solution.
BBC News. One of China's most famous dissidents, the human rights lawyer Gao Jisheng, has been released after a lengthy jail sentence. A close friend of Mr. Gao's told the BBC that he was with his brother in the far west of the country and hadn't yet returned to his home. Mr. Gao was jailed for inciting state subversion, a charge often levied against critics of China's government. He's been in and out of prison since 2005, suffering bouts of torture. Two areas in eastern Sierra Leone have been isolated from the rest of the country because of the deadly Ebola outbreak. The chief of police said only essential vehicles and services carrying food and medicine would be allowed to pass. Soldiers have also been deployed in parts of Liberia to restrict movement from affected areas. Egyptian mediators are continuing their efforts to extend a truce between Israel and the Palestinians in Gaza on the final day of a 3-day ceasefire. Indirect talks are taking place in Cairo. Israel has said it's prepared to continue the truce. The Palestinians are pressing for an end to the blockade of Gaza. Israel wants Hamas and other militant groups to give up their weapons. The second in line to the British throne, Prince William, is to become an air ambulance pilot. The prince, who was previously an Air Force search and rescue pilot, has decided not to take his salary. Peter Hunt reports.
After training for his commercial pilot's licence, and if successful, the future king will fly out of Cambridge Airport from next spring for the charity the East Anglian Air Ambulance. He'll sign an employment contract with a civilian employer, Bond Air Services, and become the first senior royal to do such a thing. His spokesman said he saw the role as a true form of public service. A healthy, octogenarian monarch and a father who has spent most of his life waiting have enabled William to once again find a sense of purpose and to once again loosen the ties of his royal straitjacket.
BBC World Service News.
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. An unprecedented 82% of California is in an extreme drought, according to the latest U.S. Drought Monitor report. Of that, 58% of the state is in an exceptional drought. In January, Governor Jerry Brown urged Californians to drop water usage by 20%, but instead, usage increased by 1%. With the failure of self-imposed water restrictions, the state implemented mandatory statewide water rationing last week. The restrictions come with a potential $500 a day penalty for excessive water use. The new rules ban washing cars without a nozzle on a hose, watering driveways or sidewalks, using portable water and ornamental fountains, and overwatering landscaping so that water runs off into roads and adjacent properties. The drought is also having a drastic effect on farmland, causing, quote, the greatest absolute reduction in water availability for California agriculture ever seen, unquote. That's according to a new study from UC Davis. It found that the drought will cost the state $2.2 billion this year alone and could cost 17,000 seasonal and part-time farm jobs. As the reservoirs and aqueducts approach record lows, farmers and water districts are turning to groundwater in order to keep up with demand. The problem is no one knows how much water is being tapped. We do know that water levels are dropping and underground reservoirs are not being replaced at the rates they need to be. California is the only Western state that does not regulate groundwater use. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about just how bad is this drought and what can we do about it. Today, we are joined by Doug Parker, director of the California Institute for Water Resources and strategic initiative leader for UC Agriculture and Natural Resources Water Quality, Quantity, and Security Strategic Initiative. That's a mouthful. Hi, Doug. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Jennifer Persyk, Deputy Executive Director for External Affairs and Operations at the Association of California Water Agencies, a statewide coalition of public water agencies. Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good
Thank
morning.
You very much.
Thank you. And we're joined by Josue Medellin. He is Senior Research Scientist with the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. Josue co-authored the study about the drought's economic impact on California agriculture. Hi, Josue. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. So, Jennifer, I want to start off with you. In the past few weeks, it seems like the drought has received so much more media attention. It's even getting now international attention. Do you think that the public understands how bad this is?
I think that they're absolutely moving in that direction. You know, we had unusual weather earlier this year, And the drought didn't manifest in all areas of the state at the same rate. But certainly now, with the mandatory emergency regulations that have been imposed by the State Water Resources Control Board, and now very much more stepped up mandatory efforts required by water agencies throughout the state, the public is getting the message of the seriousness.
How serious is this, Jennifer?
Well, it's serious. We are in the third dry year, consecutive dry year. As you mentioned in your opening, we have 80%, probably a little more than that now, of the state in extreme drought, 60% in what they call exceptional drought. These three consecutive years now top the top 20 for dryness in all the years that we've been keeping records. So we are in a world of hurt.
Doug, what would you add to that? How bad is this drought?
Yeah, it's having big impacts across the state. It's really dried out a lot of our soils, which is why we're seeing so much fire issue right now in the state. And it's starting to hurt some of our ecosystems as well, just because the natural plants that don't get watered. So we're feeling that. And then, of course, for the water users in the agricultural community and the urban community, we're facing cutbacks.
In the first 4 months of this year, state fire authorities responded to 1,250 wildfires, which is more than twice the average. And that's a lot of fires.
Yeah, it really is. And we're seeing it across the state in terms of damage to the ecosystems, structures getting burned, and also air quality really is becoming an issue in some places.
Josue, UC Davis just came out with a new report that found the drought will cost California's agricultural sector about $2 billion this year and could also cost 17,000 seasonal and part-time farm jobs this year alone. How do you explain how serious this is to the public?
Yes, well, as it was said in the opening remarks, this is the third worst drought in 106 years of record. Uh-huh. And fortunately, groundwater is still around to save us, so to get us through the drought. So we expect about $1.0 billion in revenue loss directly from agriculture and crop farming. However, we also see an increase of 0.5 billion in pumping costs. When this is added to the sectors that rely on agriculture, that sell supplies to agriculture, the impact goes up to 2.2 billion and 17,000 jobs. So this is certainly the painful part of this drought, the jobs lost in the state's economy.
Well, talk a little bit about the groundwater, because the study points out that farmers are pumping as much groundwater as they can tap into, which will diminish the state's ability to deal with future droughts. And again, I'm not sure a lot of people know about this, but California is the only Western state that does not regulate groundwater use. So first off, can you talk about what we're seeing in terms of farmers pumping as much groundwater as they can to water their crops?
Yes, in our study, we estimate that about 5 million acre-foot of the 6.5 million lost in water availability for agriculture. That represents about 25% of the total applied water in the Central Valley. Will be replaced the rate of 5 million acre-foot with groundwater. And this will happen in places where this is available. However, the big message of this drought is that this is a wake-up call to pay much more close attention to groundwater monitoring and management. I like very much the analogy of a bank account. We don't even know how much is in that bank account, and we've been overdrafting it every year. In terms of not checking the balance of how much is recharged, how much is pumped, and this makes the ability for the state to cope with drought more uncertain in the future. So this is sort of a wake-up call for more tight groundwater management.
What are your thoughts on this, Jennifer? California gives groundwater use rights to the owner of the land, the overlying land, and Senator Fran Pavli tried to push for groundwater regulation 5 years ago, which was blocked by agricultural interests, claiming it would abridge private property rights. So what are your thoughts on that, and why is California the only Western state not to regulate groundwater?
Well, I will tell you, as we speak, legislators are debating legislation right now on how we can improve the management of groundwater in California. There's been a real shift, and as the other gentleman stated, the drought has kind of brought a laser focus to our groundwater situation. It's really important to know that the reason that farmers are relying on groundwater is because they do not have access to surface water. So that's part of the equation that has to be looked at. But as we speak, you have stakeholders that are working very hard to hammer out sort of new regulations for groundwater for California. Our organization has been very active in addressing these issues and bringing forward recommendations that we think are necessary today to better protect our groundwater resources.
Why is this information so sketchy? Stanford came out with a new report, Water in the West, and they say we really need to talk about this, that public information about groundwater is sketchy, even where overpumping is a chronic problem. Why is it so hard to get this information?
Well, groundwater has been an issue for California that's managed locally, and we still believe that's the best way to handle it. And for many areas of the state, they are doing a very good job. But we do have some areas of the state that need assistance, and we do need better reporting on, you know, what kinds of resources are in the basin. We need to be tracking that as we're using those groundwater resources. So those are some of the things that they're looking at in the legislation. To provide more tools in the toolbox, for example, for public water agencies to help manage those basins.
And
so this is very, very hot topic.
Yeah, and the study points out also that when we're in a drought, groundwater provides about 60% of the state's water supply.
That's right. That's right. And that's historically been true. Just on a regular basis, it's about 40% of the water supply that we use. But out of sight, out of mind, until you're in a drought situation like we're in today, and you really see how much we rely on that resource.
And Doug, this is kind of scary, right? Because once this water is used up, it's not easily refilled. I mean, it can only be replenished via rainfall. And I felt a couple drops a few days ago, but unfortunately it didn't rain. And NASA satellites say that as groundwater supplies decline, the land in the Central Valley actually sinks.
Yeah, that's right. We have been seeing subsidence of land in the Central Valley and in other parts of the state. There are things that we can do to recharge the groundwater in good years, not this year, but we can have groundwater basins where we actually flood areas of the fields and let that water flow down. We're actually doing some research now at the University of California on being able to use fallowed agricultural lands in the winter as a way to recharge groundwater as well. And that's what's really key to this. It's not a problem that we're using a lot of groundwater during a drought. In fact, that's what we want to do. I mean, we're doing exactly what we should do. The problem is that when we don't have a drought, we need to put that water back, and we don't do that now. And that's where we really need to look at our management statewide and basin by basin on groundwater to say, how do we make sure that that is available during a drought? Because that's exactly what we want it to be.
And Josue, in the UC Davis study, which again found that the total statewide cost of the 2014 drought will be $2 billion, could potentially cost 17,000 seasonal and part-time jobs in the Central Valley, Central Coast, and Southern California. What would you say are some solutions, specifically when we're looking at agriculture?
Well, urban water users have been very proactive in terms of conservation and expanding the portfolio of water supply. We can see this example in Southern California, for example, that is not suffering this much during this drought because they have invested in a portfolio approach for supplying water, including reuse, groundwater banking, and management. A similar approach could be applied to agriculture. Agriculture could use the crop mix, such as permanent crops, annual crops, and groundwater banking, some groundwater recharge, as Doug just was mentioning. I kind of second his ideas on this is what we are supposed to be doing during drought. However, we need to pay more close attention to the bank account concept in terms of balancing the recharge and the extractions. So this is one thing for agriculture in the state to do a better groundwater management at a local level using the crop mix and groundwater recharge and as well as other strategies such as markets.
Whenever we do shows about water, we talk about, you know, who uses the most amount of water, and the percentage of the usage by the agricultural industry seems to always be kind of batted around. According to a 2012 Pacific Institute, a stunning 93% of California's water goes to agriculture. Last time around, our guest said that was too high. Josue, what does your data tell you?
I think that estimates is a bit in the high end. I've seen reports and other information that points to about 80%, probably a bit more than that.
That's still pretty high, 80%.
Yes, it is pretty high. And in the case of agriculture, conservation might do some part, but it's not a golden bullet for this. When we don't apply enough water, what happens in many other regions in the world is that the irrigated area expands and the aquifers do not recharge. So we should always look into this from a local perspective and do local level groundwater management, as Jennifer was mentioning earlier.
Jennifer, what are your thoughts on that? 80% of the water in California is used for agriculture.
Yeah, well, of the developed water, the number is closer to 40%. But let's remember, agriculture isn't just using that water for its own purposes. They're growing food. They're growing fiber that we all benefit from here in California and across the nation and around the world. So it does take water to grow food, but they have become increasingly efficient. They're growing more crops, higher yield with, you know, on less land using less water. So they've become much more high tech over the years. There's some real benefits as well, just in terms of the water isn't lost. It's recharged, into the basin. After it's applied, it moves downstream. So it's there's more to the story, but we have to remember we're all benefiting from the food that's grown with that water.
And Doug, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I would like to really second what Jennifer was saying. I mean, it's really, if we look at agricultural water use and urban water use as well, I mean, our efficiencies in this state have really grown in the last 20 to 30 years. Some of the stuff we've looked at in terms of agricultural water use show that the use on almonds, while the use has gone up, the efficiency has gone up too by about 33%, and on tomatoes by about at least 50%. And what that means is we're getting 50% more crop per unit of water on those crops. So we really have increased efficiency. And then to the point that, we are growing food, and I like to think, sometimes people do this thing where they calculate, their carbon footprint, and you say, well, what's my carbon footprint of flying, say, from Oakland to San Diego? Well, you can also calculate your water footprint and say, what's my water footprint of eating this food? So the question isn't so much, what is agriculture using the water? It's that, we're growing food and we all need to eat that food.
Well, and it's interesting you brought this up because this is getting a lot more attention now. How much water does it take to produce food? And the Factory Farming Awareness Coalition is going to launch ads in 40 BART stations next month to educate the public about how much water is used to produce dairy. And that their ads say, drought got you down? You can save the amount of water by skipping 1 gallon of milk or 27 showers. And they've got a text to get dairy-free recipes. And they've got a picture of a milk versus a shower. So 1 gallon of milk to 27 showers. What are your thoughts on campaigns like this, Doug?
I think it's useful for people to think about how much water it takes in all of their activities. It takes water to produce silicon chips for computers, too. So we should think about all of those things. One thing to remember is also, though, is, of course, where is that food or product coming from? So, it may take, a certain amount of water to make milk or to make meat or to make vegetables, but you also have to look at where it's coming from, because if we're importing, say, that product from Kansas or something, then that really doesn't impact the California water footprint as much as well.
Today we are talking about California's drought with Doug Parker, director of the California Institute for Water Resources, Jennifer Persyk, deputy executive director for external affairs and operations at the Association of California Water Agencies, and Josue Medellin. He's a senior research scientist with the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. He co-authored the study that found that the drought will cost the state of California $2 billion. And when we're talking about agriculture, about 17,000 part-time and seasonal jobs. And if you'd like to join us, oh, we almost have full lines already at 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. What questions do you have about the drought? Is this something that you and your circle of friends and colleagues are talking about? What do you think is the most effective form of conservation? What do you think deserves more attention? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go to Molly in Monterey. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much. These are really questions that are so important. I had three quick things. Can a lot of ag go to drip? Can we stop building vineyards because they're just sucking the water out? And then just cancel any idea of fracking because all it does is poison what water we have.
What do you mean go to drip, ag go to drip?
Rather than huge sprinkler systems.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this came up last show. Who'd like to take that?
I'd be happy to.
Okay, Doug.
Sure. Well, agriculture has gone to drip in a lot of cases. If you look at drip use in, say, processing tomatoes in California, about 85% of the acres are on drip. And some crops, it makes more sense than others. There are some crops where it really doesn't work as well. But we are doing also work on new crops. We're actually starting to do some work at the University of California on using drip irrigation for alfalfa, which has really never been done before. So we are looking at more and more use of drip and other efficient systems for agriculture in the state.
And what can you tell us about vineyards? There are so many new vineyards seem to be popping up on a regular basis. How water-intensive are vineyards?
Vineyards they are fairly water-intensive to get started, but they're not as water-intensive as other crops. And I think you really just need to look at sort of, you know, agriculture looks at its water allocation and decides, you know, what is the best mix of crops that I can do with this water, given where I live, you know, to make the most money. I mean, it's a industry that's around to make a profit just like the rest of businesses in our economy. And so they're making decisions based on sort of, you know, what's the best profit alternative for them.
And fracking in water is now getting a lot more attention. ProPublica recently reported that California officials have ordered an emergency shutdown of 11 oil and gas waste injection sites and a review of more than 100 others because of the drought. Doug, what are your thoughts on fracking and water?
Yeah, so fracking has become a big issue in the state. In terms of water use for fracking, it's a fairly small amount that they use for the fracking, but the fracking fluids and the potential for cracked casings and wells and things like that to pollute the groundwater are really what we need to be concerned about. From most of what I've seen, I mean, a properly constructed well, everything done just right, you know, fracking isn't such an issue, but we do need to be having regulations and things to make sure that we're doing it properly.
Josue, is this something that you've taken a look at? The New York Times had a piece that shows fracking a single oil well in California last year took 87% of the water consumed in a year by a family of four. According to the lobbying group, Western States Petroleum Association, and the Times says this has become a delicate issue because of the drought in California. Is this something that you're studying or that you've looked at?
No, we did not cover this part. I understand there are concerns about the fluids, as just Doug mentioned, especially for groundwater pollution, which makes treatment costs higher for urban areas especially, and makes can affect drinking water sources for the state.
All right. And Jennifer, do you have anything else to add on fracking?
Well, I think it's an emerging issue. Our members are certainly interested in it. We haven't spent a lot of time on that issue as of late, but we see it as something that will need some focus and regulations.
All right. And thank you for calling. We haven't done a fracking show in a while, so I will add that to the list. Thanks for calling in. Let's go next to Franz in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for listening to me. I was walking down the street. Well, first of all, I have a plan to save water that I've been doing. I have pans, and I have very, very little water going down the drain. And anything I save, I put into my washing machine to use for washing clothes. But I was walking down the street the day before yesterday, in the middle of the day, this guy was hosing down his building and his steps, and I looked at him, you know, I stood there, and I said, you know, you're wasting water. And he said, I know, but I just have to get these walls and these steps clean. And so if I had presence of mind, I'd have taken a picture of it, but I didn't. What can we do to somebody like that? Is there somewhere in San Francisco to call or go or, you know, to complain? I don't know what you do when you are confronted with a situation like that.
All right. Well, I'll get your an answer to your comment right after the break. This is your call, and we're talking about the drought.
This is Your Call on KALW. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion, or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please get in touch by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment on or a question at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, and we will be discussing coverage of the three-day U.S.-Africa Summit in Washington, D.C. We will also talk about President Obama's interview with The Economist, in which he talked about his friendly relationship with big business. And we'll talk about corporations that are moving overseas so they don't have to pay taxes. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about California's drought. The entire state is considered to be in a severe drought, and this has not happened in 15 years. According to a new report from UC Davis, this could cost the state $2 billion this year alone and 17,000 seasonal and part-time farm jobs. And we're talking about this with Josue Medellin. He's a senior research scientist with the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. He co-authored that study. Doug Parker is director of the California Institute for Water Resources. And Jennifer Persyke is deputy executive director for external affairs and operations at the Association of California Water Agencies. Jennifer, can you comment on our last caller who took photos, and you know, what should people do when this happens?
Yeah, and it's frustrating to see that, and I have to hand it to him for all the things he's doing on his own to save water. That's excellent. That's what we want to see. You know, you can report those kinds of things, in your case, to the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission and let them know. But one thing to keep in mind, there is an exemption to the hosing down of sidewalks, et cetera, for reasons of public health and safety. That is something that the state board made clear when they released the new regulations. You have to ensure that we're keeping public areas safe and clean. And I'm not sure if that was the situation, but certainly if individual Californians see those kinds of activities happening, they should just report it to their local water agency. Many agencies now have patrols that are going out and looking for these kinds of things, but they may not catch it, you know, in the act.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Franz. Let's go next to Harvey in Berkeley. Hi, Harvey.
Hello, Rose, and thanks for your wonderful guest. I feel a way to save water is, first of all, the California 700-mile-long aqueduct system has been ignored for 50 years. It needs to be rebuilt and repaired because of saltwater intrusion and earthquakes. And I say, while they're doing that, cover appropriate sections of the aqueduct system with a solar electric canopy or an awning that sort of shades and keeps the water cleaner and cooler and slows what they call evapotranspiration. A lot of evaporation coming off the water there, especially the hotter it gets. And this clean renewable electricity doesn't use any water. Photovoltaics, which means light to electricity, uses no water in the generation of clean electricity. And that electricity can be used to power Jerry Brown's new high-speed rail that's going to move through Central Valley. So these two projects, these twin projects, one could help the other because it would take water to power the train, because it turns out that coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear are second only to agriculture in their daily use of our freshwater resources. So by covering the canal with a photovoltaic shield, appropriate sections of it, that we could really save a lot of water, produce a lot of clean, renewable electricity, and power Jerry Brown's high-speed rail and slowing its use of water.
All right. Thanks, Harvey. We'll get a comment in a minute. We've got full lines, so I want to go to a few more calls. Let's hear from Yassine in San Leandro. Hi, Yassine.
Hi there. Yeah, my question so far was, as I can see in California, is rainfall has been decreasing and our population is increasing, and whether, you know, that is an instance of climate change that is affecting that. Why isn't there a lot of research going on into desalination, or, you know, providing a desalination plant for urban areas at least?
All right, we'll get to that in just a minute. Actually, let's get to that now. Who would like to talk about desalination?
I can talk.
This way.
Yeah, well, desalination is a very energy-intensive process. So even though the technology on the membranes has been improved, cost-effective technology is still not in place for many. It is cheaper when you have warm water, such as in the East Coast and the Gulf and some other places, but here still is it's an issue. It has also a problem about the disposal of the brine that can cause some environmental issues with spots in the places where it's thrown out in the sea, is where it's disposed in the sea. So it is available in some areas, but it's still a very energy intensive process. So you will still look for other alternatives, such as reusing, recycling, or simply transferring water from other uses, or marketing, or doing some other strategies before getting into desalination. But it's definitely there, and technology on that is improving, but it's not quite there yet.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Yassine. Let's go next to Ruthann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann.
Good morning. I appreciate this show tremendously. I'm wondering if any of the guests have a comment on the causes of the drought. I've heard mixed things from different people. Lots of people are the first to jump in and say global warming, global warming, global warming. And other people have said that it's more cyclical, and a lot of those folks who are pleading global warming weren't around like 150 years ago when we had a prior drought, and it kind of tends to happen the way El Niños and La Niñas do cyclically, that people just don't have the memory of being around the last time there was a really serious drought. And I'm wondering what thoughts are on the causes. I'm the first person to be upset about global warming, but I'm not sure it's the cause.
All right. Josue, do you want to take that?
Absolutely. Well, this is California, and droughts are periodic here. They won't go away. Whether what happens with climate change is very uncertain. We can get there's many scenarios around there in many studies, and well, with that said, we will still face droughts in the future, whether part of climate change or not. So this can be just a natural cyclical event.
But a lot of scientists say that this will continue, right? In fact, one scientist, Jay Femaletti, says basically pray for rain. He's afraid that if this continues, we might be out of water in 2 years. Do you think it could be that bad?
Well, what our study shows is that we still have a groundwater to cope with drought in agriculture. However, what it will be happening if this extends over 2 to 3 years is that the groundwater levels will drop. We will start seeing an increase in pumping costs, but more important, we will start seeing a loss of pumping capacity at a basin level. So some of the wells that now are reaching the groundwater table will not reach it anymore, and that's more costly, definitely.
All right. Thank you, Ruthann. We have an email from Kazu who says, as to residential households, how do you measure the effectiveness of Governor Brown's call for a 20% reduction in water usage when Sacramento won't have water meters for all houses until 2025? Fresno charges all residents a flat rate for water regardless of how much water is used. Is that true, Jennifer, in Fresno?
Well, Fresno and Sacramento have been the last two areas to complete the metering implementation, but they are moving as swiftly as they possibly can. And meters are very effective in tracking household water use. So it's something that we need, and it's happening, you know, all over the state. Obviously, most every area is metered. It's ironic that the city of Sacramento, though, is showing some of the highest reductions in water use of any area in the state. So there's a lot that you can do to reduce that water use, and our water agencies are looking at every possible tool in the toolbox to make that happen.
And the Mercury News had a piece about Santa Cruz pushing the limit with the state's toughest water rationing laws. And according to this report, since May 1st, every residential property has been allotted a monthly ration, 10 units or 7,480 gallons of water for a family of four to cover everything, including the lawn. Each unit averages about $3. For people who go above it, the cost skyrockets to $50, meaning water bills can easily top $500 for families that don't conserve. And this is amazing. 92% of households are living within their rations.
That's right. And, you know, the Santa Cruz area is very short on supplies. That's one of the things about this drought. Some areas of the state have multiple options for water supply. Other areas, like Santa Cruz, do not. So they have to be very vigilant about protecting the water resources that they have right now. So they are the most extreme case in the state.
What do you think really works when you reach out to the public on this issue? I mean, you hear, you know, take shorter showers, but what really works and what do you think is most effective?
Well, the thing that we're really trying to harp on through our Save Our Water program, SaveOurWater.com, if folks want to go there and get tips, it's outdoor water use. I mean, we want to see people cutting back inside the shorter showers, the full loads of laundry, et cetera. But outdoors, we use 50% of the water for a household. And there's still a long way to go in thinking about how we're landscaping, reducing or eliminating the amount of turf, being vigilant about how you're setting your sprinklers, making sure the water's not overrunning. There's an awful lot we can do with our landscape, putting in the drought-tolerant plants to really shift permanently how much water we're using outside.
And that is Jennifer Persyke, Deputy Executive Director for External Affairs and Operations at the Association of California Water Agencies, a statewide coalition of public water agencies. Doug Parker is Director of the California Institute for Water Resources, and Josue Medellin is Senior Research Scientist with the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. He co-authored a study that found the drought will cost the state $2 billion this year and could possibly cost 17,000 jobs. And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We've got a couple messages and also one on Facebook about food choices, asking why there's not more attention on food. For example, a study coming out of Cornell found that producing 1 pound of animal protein requires about 100 times more water than producing a pound of grain protein. Another study found that the amount of water needed to produce 1 pound of beef is 1,600 gallons compared to just 102 gallons for a pound of wheat. Doug, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think the state should do a better job of focusing on food, or are they afraid of the meat and dairy industries, frankly?
Yeah, I mean, food choices can matter for where we go. The problem with focusing solely on food choices, as I mentioned, is you need to know where the food came from. So if the food is coming from, you know, someplace with a lot of water, we really don't, you know, you may not care how much water it uses. So you have to track the food choice with the actual location to see whether that place actually it mattered, whether their water was. You know, the other thing to think about in terms of food choices is, you know, there's a whole lot of other things that go into that. And, you know, I think it's, you know, water is an important part of it, but it's also important when we start thinking about nutrition and obesity that, you know, we make proper food choices there as well. So I wouldn't want people to say, you know, just because there's a drought in California, stop eating, you know, your vegetables or something, because it's probably more important to maintain your health.
Well, they're specifically focusing on meat and dairy more than the vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, so...
Because they're so water-intensive.
They are very water-intensive. But again, you have to look at where did that product... Where was that product grown and where did it come from?
Josue, what are your thoughts? Do you think the state should focus more on these two issues because they don't get much attention?
Well, I mean, the crop mix is up to the farmers as a business. Some groundwater management could be helpful for this at a local level, and that's pretty much what I think on this at this regard.
And Jennifer, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think the state should educate the public about how much water is used for food, specifically when we're talking about dairy and meat?
Well, I think it's important that we understand how much water it takes to do all of the things that we do. I think Doug mentioned that earlier. We're not just talking about food. We're talking about computer chips, cars, all the different kinds of manufacturing. I think the public would be shocked to know how much water goes into all these processes. So education is important. But that doesn't mean you necessarily want to regulate what kind of crops that we grow in California. They're kind of two different issues.
All right, and you can find more information about this ad that's going to run from the Factory Farming Awareness Coalition about milk and showers. Again, it's going to run in BART on 40 BART stations next month, showing that 1 gallon of milk equals about 27 showers. And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Neil in Palo Alto. Hi, Neil.
Yeah, if your guests could comment on what I'll call gray water, both the pros and cons and why municipalities do or don't let people use gray water to do things like water their lawns and things like that. I don't have a view on it. I just know that communities are sort of not set up to let you take your dirty dishwasher and put it into your backyard. So if your guests want to comment on that. And also just on your other caller who called in about the guy washing the sidewalk in his building, it sounded like a holier than thou, and you had a great guest, or maybe NPR had the great guest a couple of weeks ago from the enforcement division, and he was great because he talked about they don't usually cite people. They talk to them, have a nice conversation, not you're wasting water, we're in a drought. That doesn't help anybody. It just makes enemies.
All right.
Offline.
Yeah, thank you. Jennifer, do you think a lot of people will be fined?
You know, we don't think so, and I'm glad you asked me the question because you've heard a lot and read a lot about these $500 fines. We aren't starting, our water agencies won't be starting with a $500 fine. That's up to $500, and it's really just a tool that the state board has put on the table to help water agencies manage water waste. But most of these agencies have a process that they go through. You know, an individual resident may be cited. They'll get a few reminders. But then there may be a fine at some point in the process. But we believe that Californians will respond. They've responded in past droughts. But we've just had to really reinforce the seriousness of this drought, which is what those regulations are really helping us to do. But we don't anticipate all these $500 fines being issued around the state.
Oh, and what about the question of groundwater?
I think it was gray water he was asking.
I'm sorry, gray water. Yeah,
and, you know,
sorry.
Gray water is an option, but you have to be very careful. You have to, you know, be educated. You have to understand how to put the system in place. It's a little more complicated than it sounds. An alternative, though, is put a bucket in the shower to catch any water, even though it's better if you do the Navy showers, you know, you soap up, turn water off, turn water back on. But if you do those kinds of things where you're catching the fresh water and watering that way, you know, that's a little simpler. But gray water is something that can be done, but you really have to get educated as to how to do it and put a proper system in place.
All right, thank you for the call. Bruce wants to know, he basically says PG&E installed the smart meters so quickly, even as people didn't want them, and so why is it taking Sacramento and Fresno so long to get water meters?
Well, I guess I'll take this one. Both cities had long-time ordinances, historic ordinances that banned water meters. So you always have to look at the local area, the situation of the local area. They've moved well beyond that. They have a schedule for implementing those meters. They're accelerating those programs. So it is happening. We've got to kind of get off the conversation that they're not doing it. They are doing it.
And who's using the most water in the state? I know there was an article a couple months back looking at different towns. Have you looked at this, Jennifer?
You know, I don't have that data, but something that is going to be happening soon is that water agencies, urban water agencies with the specification of the number of connections, will be reporting data as part of the new regulations that are being imposed. So there'll be better information on what water use is looking like around the state, but I don't have that information.
All right. Doug, do you look at this? And do you think it's important to...
I do think it's important to look at who's using water. I think we need a better system for tracking that. I mean, each individual agency may know, but it's hard to know across the state. So there really isn't a lot of good data on that.
We have an email from Ramona who says, are golf courses using portable water? Doug, do you know?
It would depend on the golf course. Some golf courses do, and others are using reclaimed water or tertiary treated water that may be piped to them from a wastewater treatment facility.
Are there any requirements for golf courses? Do they have to follow any rules?
If they do, it would be local rules.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that email. And let's see. Let's go to... Oh, if you'd like to call us, we have a few minutes left at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have just a couple minutes left. Josue, what would you say? It seems like this needs to be tackled, obviously, from many different angles. Do you think that we need legislation to regulate groundwater at this point?
Well, definitely having a tighter regulation on groundwater will definitely help, especially to keep this water available in the future to protect drinking water sources. So this could be very, very helpful. Currently, the local agencies or many districts have a water management plan. However, needs more close monitoring of the groundwater levels, of the pumping. In other words, we definitely need to check how much is in the account and do the checkbook every year.
And what would you say, Jennifer? I mean, what's at the top of your list at this point as the state is dealing with an unprecedented extreme drought? That's 82% of the state.
Well, I think the number one thing is to help Californians reduce water use. I flagged saveourwater.com a little earlier. There's a lot of practical information on that site. It's education. It's getting serious about it, and it's about all of us. It isn't about one area of the state or the other. It's about all of us pulling together to try to reduce water use in this very extreme drought.
What would you say to the agriculture industry? I mean, it seems like there's so much a focus on individuals. And, I mean, we're getting a couple emails from people saying, you know, what else can individuals do? San Francisco, I believe, is pretty low on the list when it comes to water usage. But, I mean, is the agriculture industry being talked about much in Sacramento? Or, I mean, do you think there needs to be more on that when we're talking about agriculture?
Well, if you're addressing that to me, this is Jennifer again. Agriculture has taken thousands of acres out of production in this drought. They are among the hardest hit sector in California. So they are doing a lion's share just by the fact that they're having to take crops and actually tear them out, take land out of production. They are absolutely part of the partnership here of reducing water use. It's affecting jobs. It's affecting small communities. So they are impacted, and they've been impacted more so than probably any other sector.
And Doug, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the two things I really think that we need to focus on are our groundwater, which I think we've talked about already. But we also, I think, need to shift some of our perspective in terms of water conservation. This idea of calling for sort of statewide 20% reduction in water use doesn't really recognize the efficiency gains that some parts of the state have already made, whether it's certain agricultural areas or urban areas. And I think as we go forward, you know, into future droughts, we need to recognize that, you know, those areas that have made permanent improvements, whether it's a drip irrigation system or a low-flow toilet, you know, they're not going to have that flexibility to cut back 20% all the time. Or maybe they can do 20, but not 40 or 50%. So we need to kind of think about our water system as a whole and look at, you know, how do we build in permanent efficiencies, but recognize that those permanent efficiencies mean that during a drought, we actually have fewer choices.
We don't have time to take Ibrahim's question, but he wants to know, how do we engage people who aren't connected to the media, who aren't reading about these issues? Doug, what would you say?
I think they're not connected to the media. I mean, we can engage them personally. Maybe they're connected through social media channels or just engaging them, you know, on a personal or community level. Really, drought is a localized thing, as we've mentioned, and so engaging them in whatever their community situation may be.
And Josue?
I think I second Doug on that. I think information is pretty good for people to reduce water use and can get easily informed from the social media on ways to reduce water use, and this can be very helpful. And again, it won't be the silver bullet, and it won't give us much more water, but it will certainly help with permanent conservation.
And Jennifer, final thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with what's been said. We are trying to reach out. Our local water agencies are reaching out. There's a lot of information on social media. We released a series of PSAs featuring Conan O'Brien this week to try to grab attention and get Californians to think about conservation. So there is a lot of information out there if you can just tap into it.
Jennifer Persyk is Deputy Executive Director for External Affairs at the Association of California Water Agencies. Doug Parker is Director of the California Institute for Water Resources. And Josue Medellin is Senior Research Scientist with the UC Davis Center for Watershed Sciences. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the three-day U.S.-Africa Summit in Washington, D.C. We'll also talk about President Obama's interview with The Economist, in which he talked about his friendly relationship with big business. We'll be joined by the San Francisco Chronicle's Andrew Ross, The Guardian's Chris McGreal, and The Nation's Mike Konzol. Where did you see the best reporting this week? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and... Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.